Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Noomi Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Southwest Gonzalez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
When they separated families, we took them to court and won. When they limited access to essential health care, we fought the bans and won. And now they're determined to reverse more of our hard-won rights and freedoms. But if they try to take away our rights, they've got to get past us. We are the American Civil Liberties Union, and we will fight any attempts to roll back our rights in the courts, in state legislatures, and in the streets.
When you're surrounded by oppressive laws, you can't just sit back and be oppressed. You get up and fight. And all of us at the ACLU are fighting for you.
Right now, the ACLU's work is more important than ever. The ACLU is fighting in the courts and advocating in all 50 states to ensure that all of us can exercise our rights. To learn more about ACLU's work defending our civil liberties, go to myaclu.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. Broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and to the entire internet at WUSB.FM. The time is 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. Time for another edition of Off the Wall. Oh, yeah. Hits me every time. It's another edition of Off the Wall here on WUSB, broadcasting nonstop. Well, the station's been broadcasting nonstop since 77. The show's been on since 2003, if you can believe that. Wow. But yeah, here we are on another Tuesday. This is Emmanuel. Kyle's over there.
Indeed, I'm here. Over there.
We've had quite a week. We have a big week coming up. In case some of you don't know, we run a conference every now and then, and that's this weekend coming up. The last week we've had little adventures. oh boy, do we want to talk about this? First of all, I noticed a big black ant inside last week. You know the kind I'm talking about, the big ones, the really big ones. They move kind of fast, and they're not like the tiny ones that build their anthills. I don't know where the big black ones live, to be honest. But you see them, you know, walking around on sidewalks, and sometimes they get inside the house. So, yeah, there's one. We grabbed it, and, you know, I used to smash bugs when I was a kid. Don't really like to do that anymore, you know? So I like to throw them outside. Kyle, I know you like to throw them outside as well. We do that with spiders. We don't do that with the spotted lantern fly. Not that that ever gets inside, but we have different orders for that. No big deal. Threw the ant out. And then, hey, look, it's another ant. That went on and slowly increased. And then we realized there's ants all over the damn place. Actually, there weren't ants when we started. But after about the fifth one, we started to realize there's more coming. It doesn't seem to be an end. I'm not exactly sure what happened. I think a branch might have fallen onto the roof or something, because that's how ants tend to get in. And they found, you know, a little crack, and for some reason they thought that's where they should go. Not a good idea. No water, no food. But they were all over the place. And it was driving me crazy because, you know, I'm kind of funny in various ways. I don't like ants crawling around my food, on top of my head, over the TV screen, wherever it is they happen to be. I don't like that. It bothers me. It gives me, you know, bad feelings. And you can't go to sleep thinking there's ants crawling around, you know? So, after a while, you know, we had to come up with different ways of dealing with this. And you found something really ingenious.
Yeah, we looked around, but it was amazing because we were actively kind of having this, like, bucket brigade of removal because at the same time investigating where or how, what might be going on.
Yeah, upside-down cup. That's how you know this is an ant or something else trapped underneath it. They would put a little piece of paper underneath that and carry it outside and
let it go. Yeah, it was, like, the only available thing, but you can see through it. And trap them and carefully escort them out and just kind of tap them out.
We treat them a lot nicer than ICE treats human beings. Let's put it that way. You know, we put them outside and
oh my gosh, I'm realizing how much that sounds like I'm on some kind of operation like that.
No, but you're not.
This is different.
This is different. For God's sake, this is different.
Well, eventually we looked into various types of let's say bait stations and things that can help, but we don't want to have we located them outside of the building.
Yeah, you know, that's a last resort. That's to keep them from making the mistake of entering the structure to start with. But once they're inside, you know, what do you do then? I don't want to run around stomping on them. Like I said, I don't do that anymore. I did that as a kid. And, I'll beg forgiveness for that someday, but...
You had the idea of using a flashlight and looking around a little bit while we were...
Well, that didn't help. It just made us feel worse because we saw how many there were coming in on the roof. It was like a highway of ants. And for some reason, some were going out and some were going in. So I don't know what that was all about. So we looked up. You know, we don't want insecticide. We don't want to be breathing in insecticide, and you should not do that either. It's bad. It's bad for the lawn.
Oh,
it's
you're
bad.
Right. I almost forgot.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm talking. Telling the story, Kyle. we decided we didn't want insecticide. So we did some reading up, and it turns out there's one thing that ants really don't like very much. You want to tell the folks what that is?
Absolutely.
And before he tells you, remember, this is educational radio. This is what your pledge money goes to, is education. You're going to learn something in just a few moments. How much is that worth to you? WUSB.FM, click on the whatever link is there, the pledge, and keep this station on the air, because there are so many people out there that don't want it to be on the air, as you well know. Okay, Kyle, go ahead and educate everyone.
Well, ants rely heavily on a scent trail, and they use it for navigation and communication mm-hmm. to a certain degree. And it's a fascinating system that you can actually disrupt. And there are a lot of different types of things you could imagine what is possible. But one of the methods is using peppermint oil, which
they don't like that.
Oh, they don't like it one bit. I didn't really realize the extent.
Well, okay, we first...
To the effectiveness of it?
We first noticed they started acting a little differently, and we saw a couple of them seem to be kind of fighting with each other, like one-on-one. It was like, what's this all about? And they slowed down a little bit. That's all we noticed the night that this happened.
Yeah, we had some of this oil, like an essential oil, just from some other pest.
Why did we have it just lying around?
It was from some other pest we were managing, but... had stocked up on it. I can't remember what it was.
No, it was James. Yeah, okay. We got rid of him.
No. Was it those flying things? I don't know. Whatever. You occasionally run into this, and you want to find something that is non-toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And I just basically sprayed a little bit in a certain area. And like you said, they started kind of approaching each other, and I realized there were these, like, tangles of ants, sort of like grappling. If you know what I mean, like wrestling moves, like grappling.
It kind of looked like they might be having fun or doing something, you know, mate-wise. I don't know. I don't know what ants do.
We're not sitting here trying to make assumptions and judge anything. We're just observing the behavior.
But the next day, we were very, wary of what we might see waiting for us. Would there be thousands of ants? Would the whole place be infested? And instead, you know, there's this open area with a wooden floor. And it was like looking at the middle of an episode of Game of Thrones, because it was like a battlefield with nothing but bodies strewn all throughout it. And I don't know what happened overnight, but the ants must have had some mega fight between themselves, and basically nobody survived. Nobody survived the fight. They all killed each other. I guess it's a tragedy, but still, boy, that peppermint oil is effective and, you know, non-toxic, so there's that.
Yeah, it was like a medieval battlefield. I don't want to get into it too much, but I was surprised because when I was approaching it, I didn't really realize it was there. Although I started stepping on things, and I realized, oh, these might be... bugs left over, or bugs that had dropped or fallen ill or something. And then I realized this was the leftovers of confrontation on a massive scale overnight. And it was incredibly surprising. And really all there was to do was to clean up, pick up the pieces.
And, you know, there were still ants, you know, around, but not nearly as many. And the days since, they've steadily decreased. And I think word has gotten out that this is not, you know, a place for them to go. And they do communicate. But they also, as Kyle said, they communicate through smell. And you can really screw up an ant colony by just dousing them with a different smell. And other members of that colony will just assume that they're enemies. And... destroy them, fight to the death, just because they have a different smell. I mean, it's almost as stupid as what we do, humans, to each other. But boy, it's easy to apply. And so there's we haven't really done anything to mitigate the situation that started it, because we have to get somebody to remove the branch. But there's no more ants that I can see. There's other kinds of crazy bugs flying in every now and then, like beetles and... huge moths and that kind of thing. But, everybody has their own poison, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, and it's a high-activity part of the year for everything that's emerged. And, yeah, it's just amazing how these things crop up. You realize you're among all these different species.
Isn't nature beautiful?
It's a wild world.
Do you remember that caterpillar we found?
Whoa.
For some reason, it was in the garage. And it was this big green cat. I know it wasn't just, you know, like an inchworm or something. You know, this was something that you could hold in your hand and throw it like a weapon.
I'm wondering if it was a Luna moth.
Well, it's going to come out something big whenever it does. And hopefully it does. We rescue that, too, because a garage is no place for a caterpillar. I don't know much about, you know, caterpillar upbringing, but I'm pretty sure there's no food in there, and it's not a very nature-friendly place.
So it had, like, wandered its way onto an oil-absorbent
pad. Yeah, we toss it into some plants, and hopefully it'll go into a cocoon and come out something nice, and then a bird will eat it. Because that's what happens, right? That's nature. Hey, we have a letter from, I don't actually know what the name is here. I'm going to say BG. How about that? Enjoyed your talk of invasive species. Yeah, we had a nice conversation about that in a recent show. We were talking about the spotted lanternfly, which, again, is not the same thing as a firefly. So if you see a firefly, they are not the enemy. They are good. And please encourage them. Praise them. Hold out your hand. They'll land on you, and you can have a nice conversation. But the spotted lanternfly, my God, they're everywhere, and they must be eradicated.
They'll land on you, too. And they're not bashful about it.
I had one launch towards me the other day. You know, I looked at it and said, is this one of them? And just it launched right into my face. And it was kind of scary. And yeah. I don't know what happened to it after that. I would have destroyed it. But that's what everyone's told to do around here is get rid of these things. But I'm not sure how effective that's going to be because, boy, they multiply.
It feels futile, and you start doing it, and you feel like you more emerge as you do it.
Right, right.
And is this what is really the answer to this?
Well, anyway, BG writes, enjoyed your talk of invasive species. I'm no expert on the subject, and we certainly are not either. Bringing in another species to combat the first might make things worse. And then they bring up an interesting point. What happened to the old lady who swallowed the fly? Do you remember that? The old lady who swallowed the fly. Apparently she swallowed a spider to catch the fly. And then she swallowed a bird to catch the spider. How did she swallow a bird? She swallowed a bird to catch the spider. And we know the rest.
This is a famous nursery rhyme.
Actually, we don't. I don't know the rest. What happens after that? She swallowed a fly. First of all, I think, isn't that the end of it? If you swallow the fly, it's not going to be buzzing around anymore. It's like not going to survive that. But you swallow the spider, who apparently is going to go out and catch the fly. And now you have a spider in you. And then you have to swallow a bird to catch. What? She swallow a cat after the bird, and then. I mean, you can't swallow a cat.
And like a fox or something.
Can we get? Yeah, I'd like to know how this turns out, because I'm familiar with the phrase. I know an old lady or a woman who swallowed a fly. And
you
I think
want
it's
to, I'll get
swallow,
the research.
Swallow the fly. I think she'll die. I think is. I remember singing that as a child. But honestly, I don't know of. Is this one? Okay, who is this? Oh, wow. This is a version done by Burl Ives. If you've ever seen Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, he plays the snowman. And he's got a very recognizable voice. He sings White Christmas and all. He's just, you know, long gone, of course. But
this is like from the research department. This might answer our question.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what they're for. Okay, so we have to listen to all the lyrics and figure out what happened to her. All right, so she's going to start by swallowing a fly, and all right, let's go.
I know an old lady who swallowed a fly. I don't know why she swallowed a fly. Perhaps she'll die. I know an old lady who swallowed a spider that wriggled and jiggled and tickled inside her. She swallowed a spider to catch the fly, but I don't know why she swallowed the fly. Perhaps she'll die. I know an old lady who swallowed a bird. Now how absurd to swallow a bird. She swallowed a bird to catch the spider that wriggled and jiggled and tickled inside her. She swallowed the spider to catch the fly, but I don't know why she swallowed the fly. Perhaps she'll die. I know an old lady who swallowed a cat. Now fancy that, to swallow a cat.
Please.
She swallowed the cat to catch the bird. She swallowed the bird to catch the spider that wriggled and jiggled and tickled inside her. She swallowed the spider to catch the fly, but I don't know why she swallowed the fly. Perhaps she'll die. I know an old lady who swallowed a dog.
Oh, come on.
What a hog to swallow a dog. She swallowed the dog to catch the cat. She swallowed the cat to catch the bird. She swallowed the bird to catch the spider that wriggled and jiggled and tickled inside her. She swallowed the spider to catch the fly, but I don't know why she swallowed the fly. Perhaps she'll die.
She's got a big mouth.
I know an old lady who swallowed a goat. She just opened her throat and swallowed a goat. She swallowed the goat to catch the dog. She swallowed the dog to catch the cat. She swallowed the cat to catch the bird. She swallowed the bird to catch the spider that wriggled and jiggled and tickled inside her. She swallowed the spider to catch the fly, but I don't know why she swallowed the fly. Perhaps she'll die. I know an old lady who swallowed a cow. I don't know how she swallowed a cow. She swallowed a cow to catch the goat. She swallowed the goat to catch the dog. She swallowed the dog to catch the cat. She swallowed the cat to catch the bird. She swallowed the bird to catch the spider that wriggled and jiggled and tickled inside her. She swallowed the spider to catch the fly. I don't know why she swallowed the fly. Perhaps she'll die. I know an old lady who swallowed a horse. She's dead.
Oh, yes, Burl. Burl, I honestly didn't know what was coming. Yeah, of course. And I think maybe you got taken in there with those tails. Swallowed a horse. Come on. All the animals she killed. Just to get rid of a fly? I mean, we didn't do that. We used peppermint to get rid of ants. Works a whole lot better. All right, levity's over. Let's get into some serious business here. So what, Washington, D.C. has now been taken over by Trump? Okay, you know what? It's Washington, D.C. Do we really know the difference? It's where the Capitol is, where the White House is. So, yeah, you know, it's so close to Trump, you kind of almost are okay giving him this one. But when he says things like, well, Baltimore's next, or New York or Chicago are next, that's when you have to really start wondering where we are headed. And if we don't start resisting and fighting back for real, these things are going to stick. They're going to happen. I mean, it's only August. And look at all the craziness that has happened so far. You know, public TV and public radio are decimated. You have National Guard troops being sent to various cities. You have vaccines being banned. You have education being seen as the enemy. The list just goes on. I could spend the rest of the show just listing all the things that have been completely destroyed or crippled. And you have to wonder, you know, with more than 3 years left, what else could happen, and will we be able to recover from this? So Trump has told himself that crime is out of control in Washington, D.C. You know, you ever go to like a family gathering, right? And you're with, you know, your grandparents or aunts and uncles, and you tell them, hey, you know, I saw a concert in the city, or I'm hanging out in the city, and they always say something like, oh my God, I would never go there. It's so scary. It's, you know, and there are young people that feel that way too, that it's just, you know, it's a really dark place and anything goes. And it's so not true. If you actually take the time and go and explore and live in that place, and I'm talking not just New York City, but cities all over the country, all over the world, you'll see that it's much more nuanced than that. Sure, there's crime everywhere. Got news for you, there's crime in Topeka, Kansas. There's crime in, you know, the smallest town in the USA. There's crime, and the crime in the red states, or the red areas, actually is higher than in big cities, percentage-wise and all that. But it's very easy to make it so that these big cities, usually with African-American mayors, are out of control, and anything goes. I've seen liberals do this. It's very easy to get on board that bus and say that it's out of control and something has to change. And that's how Trump is able to get away with this, because he latches onto fears. And people say, yeah, I feel that way. I don't feel safe. Even though all the statistics say crime is down, I don't feel safe. And if I don't feel safe, then it's not safe. So I'll do whatever he says. It's very easy to get somebody to sign up for that kind of thing. Fear is a real motivator. So that is where we stand.
I'm interested in that. I had the same sort of contrast in my first experiences in New York. The stereotypes were so off.
Mm-hmm.
It was like uncanny. It really was.
What were you told?
A revelation. That it's dangerous. That you'll get mugged or anything.
Can be dangerous. You can get mugged for sure.
Yeah, like that. You'll be even like gun violence, which is oddly like.
All right, let me tell you something.
That's like a stereotype left over from cinema, I think, even. Is it like every metropolis or every like metropolitan, Gotham City?
A city like New York, there is gun violence. But as far as the kind of gun violence that you see that the United States is known for, i.e. mass shootings, we had one about a week or so ago. And I think, three people died? Maybe four? I'm not exactly sure. But it was the top story. It was something they said it's the worst in 25 years, that one incident. Yesterday in Austin, Texas, there was a mass shooting. Three innocent people were killed. It didn't even make the news. I've looked everywhere. No one's talking about it. Yeah, if you type Austin into Google News, you'll find it. That's the only way. It's not a headline anymore. Another mass shooting in Texas. That's all it is.
Yeah, and at the time when I was where I was coming from, it's in stark contrast. Probably the prevalence in the area on the West Coast of guns and gun violence was more at the time, and it is probably still higher in some parts of where I was coming from, which. Again, is all stereotype, but I spent some time in other cities, like Chicago, which itself had problems with violence and stuff like that. But you realize they're massive places, and that by just going with how storied a place is or other people's amalgamation of what a place is like will not necessarily be your experience. You could live, work, visit, explore, have a wonderful time there amidst the same kind of circumstances. There just are in other parts of the area and often, separated by class or race and on it goes. But to not acknowledge the changes and just take isolated incidents or what few incidents there are and paint a whole place that way, it really does deny a cultural exchange and just people from other parts of our country understanding one another better because of some kind of myth, like it's like a big branding of a place by other outside influences, not necessarily the place itself. You really have to go there to understand it. That was like, I didn't think I would ever have an understanding of New York City the way I do. And I still have just had like a tiny sliver, like the tiniest mm-hmm. little experience and other parts of New York State or the East Coast in general. But you can't let that story dictate your actions and you're right. It becomes this like thing. You talk about having a great time in a place and someone brings up a completely separate story
right.
that yes occurred, but these are massive places and isolated, things do happen and there are statistics to look at and that's your point.
Try doing the same thing to them. It's easy. You can always counter somebody's positive story with a negative story and say, well, what about that? And it's got nothing to do with the story they're telling. You could have this idyllic, summer day, in the middle of Nebraska in a cornfield. And, that's heaven on earth. But what about the serial killer that's, 10 miles down the road? It's got nothing to do with what the person is describing, but there's something negative in the same basic, environment. And, if you use that to basically paint everything with a broad brush, you can influence people. You can latch onto their fears and make them think that it's just all negative. and it's just not the case. So this piece from CNN says emergencies are in the eye of the beholder, and this is what Trump is known for. When we think of emergencies, it usually involves surges in crime or crime that is not being responsive or tools that we have that we cannot use in a normal course. That's when we use an emergency. But Trump's pseudo-emergency in the nation's capital is far from his first. This year he's declared national emergencies on the economy, energy, and the border to unlock extraordinary executive branch powers. But there is no economic emergency. Trade deficits existed for decades. The U.S. recovered from the pandemic better than many other developed nations. This hardly represents the sudden crisis he's used to seize tariff power away from Congress. Now, America doesn't face an energy emergency either, but Trump's invocation unleashed new drilling and prospecting rules. Meanwhile, the president justifies hardline deportation policies by claiming America is under an invasion of criminals and terrorists, which is a hair-raising exaggeration, even if border enforcement was lax for parts of the Biden administration. So basically what he's doing, he's sending troops, and they are troops, into Washington, D.C. Now, you could say that Los Angeles was a test case and that Washington, D.C. is another test case. In Los Angeles, you had demonstrations and a bit of insurrection, so people were more accepting of it. In D.C., again, the specter of crime and it being D.C. But we have to be very, very careful here, because what is going to happen is, you know, this becomes normal. He'll move on to some other city. And before you know it, every American city will have soldiers patrolling the streets. Now, does that sound like a democracy to you? To me, it sounds like a dictatorship. And we are just taking another step towards making that normal. It's very, very dangerous and scary. And the worst part of it is we don't stand up to it enough. We don't stand up to it enough. I mean, you know, I know the mayor of D.C. doesn't really have any power, but she could be doing more than saying, well, maybe this is a good thing. No, it's not a good thing. It's an awful thing. This is not how our country is supposed to be run. And we need to fight back against these things. We need to become the problem, okay? We need to be standing in front of their vehicles and preventing them from moving forward. And yes, we'll get arrested. Yes, we'll get beaten. But it's either that or we lose this country to idiots like Trump and all those, well, so many words I want to use.
Power hungry?
No, that doesn't begin to do it justice.
Those words.
Slime bags that surround him. That's not the word I wanted to use. But you know what? We need a different version of the show. But just look at the people around him. They are all such horrible people. They really are. They are the worst of the worst. And every night on the news, you see them spouting off, and you realize how ignorant they are, how hateful they are. And they have all this power. And the rest of us are just sitting back saying, boy, I wonder how bad it will get tomorrow. Look, I know we don't know what to do. But if we have any faith in our founding fathers, you know, there's a failsafe for this kind of thing. And it's not working. It's not working. Well, today, I got another story. Give me a second. I have so many of them.
You know what it is?
Our friends. Oh, go ahead.
I was just observing. It's like we're watching. It's like the institutions and the news, the leadership itself, cannot be a reality show we watch and dispose of. Like a lot of, I think, reality TV is considered disposable in certain ways. Like you don't have, you can invest in it as much as you want, but it's not your life.
No, well, it's not.
If we're just going to sit back and observe this whole thing collectively as though it's
okay, the rest of the world, it's a reality show. For the rest of the world, for us, it's reality.
Yeah,
we have to realize that.
Okay, that's a good baseline.
Anyway, the Supreme Court is now formally being asked to overturn same-sex marriage. Okay, 10 years. After the Supreme Court extended marriage rights to same-sex couples nationwide, the justices this fall will consider for the first time whether to take up a case that explicitly asks them to overturn that decision. Now, you know, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, either they'll make the right decision and not touch their own ruling, or they will overturn it. And are we going to react then? Or are we just going to leave the country, sit back, and say, oh, boy, we are victims. we have to fight. And I think when we keep seeing how low Democrats are polling, and they are polling very low, I don't think they're polling that low because of policy, because of what they stand for. I think they're polling that low because they're so ineffective and so cowardly, and they will not stand up and fight. Some will. There are some who will, and I'm thrilled that a socialist is on track to become the next mayor of New York City, because it drives the Republicans crazy. It drives some Democrats crazy, too. But we need change. We need people with conviction and courage to stand up and give the middle finger to these people and say, we're not going to be pushed around. And nobody is doing that. I mean, I'm exaggerating. Obviously, there are some people who are doing that, but not enough. Too many Chuck Schumers of the world. You know, too many centrist, laid-back, let's-see-what-happens Democrats who are not doing enough or really anything. They need to step aside, and they need to let people who, you know, speak a little clearer or maybe a little angrier and have some plans and have a lot of people behind them, give them the microphone, all right? And let's see if we can fix this, because you guys not doing squat. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think this, like, what it's really, to me, a question of what are you doing while you wait it out, at least to them, the sort of career politicians. And if you're not going to do it, who are your proxies? Who are you elevating, letting speak to some of this stuff with some fire? It cannot be so sanguine and just blasé. We have to, like, be activated.
One by one, voices are being silenced. Now, it's not like being sent to the gulag in Siberia or something like that. Not yet, anyway. But voices are being silenced. And we set this up by allowing newspapers and television networks and franchises of various sorts to be owned by mega corporations, so that when they cave, it all goes away. As opposed to having independent voices out there that will not back down, even though they're dwarfed, by the size of the people that they are opposing. You know, it's so important to be able to keep those channels open, because without them, people feel like they're alone. And the one thing that I get from listeners is that it's such a comfort to know they're not alone, that there are other people out there sharing their frustration, sharing their anger, sharing their goals and desires for the future, and knowing that we can attain them. But you have to know people are out there in order to do that. It's so important. All right, here's some news out of Nassau County, currently run by fascists, but this is a college campus at Delphi University, and some shameful actions by them. They sanctioned a pro-Palestinian campus group for creating a hostile environment towards the Jewish community with its social media posts. That's according to an investigation report from the university's Office of Community Concerns and Resolution. Okay, you know, I'm not dismissing this out of hand. I want to hear more. I want to hear just what exactly it is that they are accused of doing. The August 7th report announced a one-year period of disciplinary probation for the group, which is called Students for Justice in Palestine. There's a chapter right here on campus at Stony Brook, during which its activities will be subject to increased scrutiny. Violations of disciplinary probation terms or any other code violation during the probation period may result in the organization's suspension or revocation or of recognition by the university. So okay, the good news is they still recognize you guys, but they don't like you very much. And if you do more of what they're accusing you of doing, they won't recognize you, and they still won't like you. I never understood how that worked. Anyway, Brandeis Center, which is a Washington, D.C.-based Jewish civil rights nonprofit representing complainant Tuval Fogral, who's an Adelphi math professor, received a copy of the report, which it released. This math professor, because I can't pronounce his name, I'm sorry, filed a formal complaint last year at the university alleging that SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine's social media policy, was creating a hostile environment. Again, I want to know more about how. University investigators reviewed 23 SJP social media posts. None was so offensive to constitute a hostile environment. But the number and content of the social media posts over a protracted period of time was found to be subjectively and objectively offensive and so severe or pervasive to constitute a hostile environment towards those who identified of Jewish identity. That sentence is a really long freight train. But come on, you're saying that all these posts are acceptable, but when you lump them all together, they're a problem. You know, it almost sounds like how you would treat a group of people that are in the way, inconvenient. Individually, they're fine. You talk to them one-on-one, they're good people. But when you put them all together, oh my God, you got to do something. Come on. We deserve better than this. Can we at least see some examples of the posts? No? Not one? Under the Adelphi sanction, SJP is required to meet by September 15th with university communications officials to discuss appropriate social media use and the use of credible news sources. Additionally, if SJP wants to continue to use its social media platform as an official university social media account, the group must comply with a university policy allowing its officials to read the posts. Well, I assume they could read the posts. That's the whole point of social media. Are we talking about private social media? Like people's emails? What are we talking about here? A spokeswoman for the university has more information. No, declined to respond to requests for comment. Out of fairness, though, Adelphi SJP could not be reached, and National SJP did not respond to a request for comment either. But people, we all have to talk and figure out what this is all about. That group's website, though, says student members of Palestine solidarity organizations have been leaders in unifying demands for freedom, justice, and equality for the Palestinian people, and there's the problem. You can't do that. You can't advocate for freedom, justice, and equality for the Palestinian people. Haven't you read the news? I mean, Israel just assassinated journalists, and they're proud of it. They basically wiped out the entire team of Al Jazeera. Now, it's so hard to even talk about this with people in this country, because you say they wiped out members of Al Jazeera. Oh, good for them. I mean, they tore down the World Trade Center, didn't they? That was Al-Qaeda, not Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera is one of the finest broadcasters of news out there. And if you were allowed to watch it, you would know that. Now, I think they have a feed on YouTube, so you can track it down if you're not afraid. Obviously, they're very upset right now because they've lost so many people, and it's certainly not the first group of people they have lost. But for Israel to do something so barbaric as to murder people living in a tent, under the guise that one of them was affiliated with Hamas without providing any evidence, that is inexcusable. And, you know, I don't know what the solution for this is, but my critique also extends to the United Nations and all these groups that are having emergency meetings and condemning. I mean, this has been going on for decades, and nothing ever happens. And don't we all see that it's ineffective? It doesn't do anything. Things need to be stepped up in one form or another. Now, Hamas is not the answer, obviously, and we've certainly been saying that from the outset, but not doing anything, and basically the world is not doing anything, that certainly is not a solution. Israel has to be stood up to. If force is the only thing they understand, then force is what they should get. It's unforgivable what they have done in the last couple of years. You know, what Hamas did was so unforgivable on October 7th, and what an opportunity that was for the world to unite behind Israel. And I think the world was ready to do that. Yeah, there were some idiots saying stupid things, but you don't latch on to those people. You latch on to the reasonable ones who wanted to help stop this nightmare. Instead, what Israel did was create a nightmare 10 times worse, if not more. No, so many times worse. 60,000 innocent people killed, and that's okay with most people in Israel right now, well, then Israel's not okay with me. And I'm sure it's not okay with a lot of other people. What it's become is just this distorted vision of the promise of what Israel was supposed to be. And I think if there was ever a test of someone's commitment and someone's humanity, this is it. Do you blindly follow and just do whatever you're told? Or do you stand up to it and stop it? And destroy it, because that's really the only thing that's going to work right now. These people need to be imprisoned and held for the war crimes they have been charged with, just like Vladimir Putin needs to as well. It is as bad, and it's disgusting. It's disgusting to see the media, the government, even the people here in other countries just blindly follow and close their eyes to some of the worst human rights violations I think I've ever seen. You know, nobody is happy to see a video of one of the hostages looking emaciated as he's being held captive to this day somewhere in Gaza. But to condemn that and to completely ignore the fact that tens of thousands, no, hundreds of thousands, I don't even know what the numbers are. It's gotten so crazy and ridiculous. But so many people in Gaza are in the same shape, and they just get ignored. So, you know, by this logic, okay, the hostage is supposed to get the food and the people who live there get nothing. And that's okay with you. I mean, yeah, having hostages there is wrong. I think we all know that. But there's a lot of levels of wrong here. And until we start to accept that, it's not going to get any better. Now, what's going on in England? It's almost unbelievable. I want to read you a piece from The Guardian, part of a piece from The Guardian. It's titled, "What Will Happen to People Arrested at the Palestine Action Demonstration?" Now, Palestine Action is a group that basically stands up for Palestinians and demands justice and all kinds of other things. There were more than 500 arrests this Saturday, and they were arrested under Section 12 of the Terrorism Act. And you can yourself be arrested under Section 12 of the Terrorism Act in the UK, simply for saying that you support the group Palestine Action. Yeah. And so doing, you qualify for up to 14 years in jail. Just for saying, "I support Palestine Action." Well, wait. I'm quoting. Don't take my quote out of context. That wasn't me saying it. Oh my God, what have I done? The consequences of being arrested for expressing support for Palestine Action could be life-changing. It's almost farcical to realize it's that simple. Simply for having a demonstration. Majority of the 522 people arrested in Parliament Square, in most cases, get ready for the crime, after displaying pieces of cardboard saying, "I opposed genocide, I support Palestine Action." That's it. Holding a piece of cardboard that said that. They were detained under Section 13 of the Terrorism Act of 2000. This is the lower level part of the act, which means those who are charged will be tried in a magistrate's court rather than a crown court. Okay, we're here in the States. We have no idea what any of that means, obviously, but some have been charged under the more serious Section 12, which means they could seek to have their case heard in front of a jury of their peers at a crown court. The prosecution could also seek to have the trial heard there. Defend Our Juries, the organizing group behind the protest, has said it will not be recommending what people should do, as they have already participated at huge personal cost, but it will be providing the information. There is a scenario in which court trials do not happen if a co-founder of Palestine Action is successful in a legal challenge against the Home Secretary's decision to ban the group under anti-terrorism laws. Now, I've done a little bit. I mean, you know, I haven't done much research at all. but a little bit, you know, but going to the Wikipedia page that describes Palestine action, and I welcome other pages that describe more or different views, but basically they are a British pro-Palestinian direct action network. They were founded in 2020 with the stated goal of ending Israeli apartheid. And I know you're not allowed to say that, but that's what they want to end. The group, and this is what they do, they disrupt the arms industry in the United Kingdom with direct action, as the organization accuses the arms industry of being complicit in the Gaza genocide. I don't really know how they can make that accusation. I mean, they give weapons to the Israelis, and the Israelis use those weapons, yes, but, I mean, you can't prove that the Israelis are using those weapons in Gaza. I mean, they could be using those weapons for, you know, training purposes or you know, in a museum or something where people look at weapons, you know, weaponry museums. Well, they have those, Kyle. They have weaponry museums. I'm just saying the evidence is flimsy here that just because... Okay, I'm sorry.
No, especially when there aren't any journalists in Gaza.
Yeah.
And when you're assassinating them.
And, you know, that raises an interesting point because... One of the critiques is that whenever you hear that a hospital has been bombed or that people are starving or that a whole family was wiped out by a drone, the comeback by the right wing is invariably you're taking Hamas's word for that because they're the spokespeople for Gaza. Okay, fair point. Yeah, I don't trust Hamas, but who else is there? Israel will not allow any journalist into Gaza. And it's a very shrewd move on their part because there's nobody there to report on what's actually going on. So you have to trust the people that Israel has deemed to be untrustworthy. You see how they completely control the narrative. So, yeah, that's a problem right there. And I think they lose any moral high ground with those kinds of actions. Anyway, key targets of Palestine action have been British factories of Israeli weapons manufacturer Elbit Systems and RAF Breege Norton. In their campaigns, Palestine Action have used protest, occupation of premises, destruction of property, and vandalism, which sometimes resulted in its members being arrested. Palestine Action describes its actions as nonviolent yet disruptive, saying it has never hurt a human being. Now, I've done a little bit of searching, you know, not too much, but I'll do more. And I've yet to find anyone countering that. Basically, the most outraged people are upset that they spray-painted airplanes or, you know, did something, some act of vandalism. There were more impressive acts of vandalism in my high school. All right, so just because other people are sensitive to the issue does not make these people terrorists. And it certainly does not make people who support somebody doing something. They are certainly not terrorists. But the fact that we live in a world now where you can go to jail for 14 years simply for saying you support a group. Tell me that's not the problem. And are we not moving closer to that in this country as well? Because I think we are. And it's a very, very scary time. So, yeah, Adelphi University, United Kingdom, what Israel is doing to Al Jazeera and to journalists everywhere, it's something that we can't stop talking about. And I think we all need to pledge not to stop talking about that. You might be accused of being anti-Semitic just for criticizing, but, you know, there's a lot of anti-Semitic Jews then. Because, in fact, most people in the Jewish community, I think, are horrified by what is going on in their name. And I hope that results in strong, strong action.
Yeah, and think about this stuff when people are saying, oh, you know, this is your friendly democracy in the region. It's like, well, yeah, on paper, but not in practice. It's unrecognizable behavior. Belligerence.
Yeah. It's sad, all the things that are happening. And then, shifting gears here, another shooting incident in Atlanta at the Centers for Disease Control. this guy opened fire on the CDC. think, over 100 rounds from what I heard, because he was convinced that the COVID vaccine had made him depressed and suicidal. Well, something certainly did, but simply saying it's that, well, that's something that RFK, well, I shouldn't say RFK, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., not the real one, and Trump and his people have been saying. And basically, people like this who are vulnerable will believe it and will act upon it. You know, it's just like that crazy guy who drove up to the Pizzagate place and did some terrorist act there. And these are terrorist acts. There's no question about it. Opening fire on the CDC because you don't like what they allegedly did? Well, what the vaccine allegedly did was save 17 million lives, but you never hear that talked about. And that's another thing that Democrats don't do enough of is defend themselves. You know, this is, we mentioned earlier in the show that this country recovered from COVID, not that COVID is over, but recovered from the main part of COVID better than many other industrialized countries. And that's an accomplishment. And that's something Trump was actually involved in because he was in power in 2020 and he helped make the vaccine possible. But admitting to that is something he doesn't want to do now. Well, Democrats should, and they should stop apologizing for doing the best they could with what they had. Yeah, kids were kept out of school. People died in nursing homes. It's not a Democratic plot. It's reality that what happens. You know, the same amount of people died in nursing homes in Florida, but nobody is blaming DeSantis. And kids all over the world had to deal with this until we realized that kids weren't as susceptible. So Democrats got to grow a spine. I really hope that happens. Out of time. Kyle, it's been a joy having you listen to me preach on. I'm sorry. Final sentence.
Yeah, what do you want to talk about tonight?
Well, our email address is otw@2600.com. Let's go out and enjoy the heat and watch the ants stay outside.
Is it that time already?
It is that time. I'm sorry.
Bye.